Earlier this morning in the first hour, we were looking at the qualifications of elders in the local church. And as we go into this last hour of worship and our last study for this first day of the week, I want to continue along the lines of one of the qualifications that we were looking at there is actually the one that we started out with, where in 1 Timothy chapter 3, as well as in Titus chapter 1, we are told that elders in the local church are to be hospitable. The King James Version translates it, given to hospitality. We talked about the meaning of that word and some of the aspects of it. Philoxenos is the idea of loving strangers, being fond of guests. As I said, in 1 Timothy 3 and in verse 2, Titus chapter 1 and in verse 8 we find it. I want you to notice also in 1 Peter, we referenced this earlier this morning, but I want to come back to this passage now in our study in 1 Peter chapter 4. And then notice in verse 9, he says, "Be hospitable to one another without grumbling." You know, this indicates to me that the command to be hospitable is something that while many may love to do this, have developed a spirit of love for strangers, for brethren, for one another, there is also the danger that we can be complaining about doing it, although we're doing it. Maybe doing it without the right heart. Or maybe his admonition is to be hospitable to one another without grumbling. It's telling us that through hospitality, we will not have that same spirit of grumbling about one another. We will have a deeper love and more patience for each other. But certainly, the two do not go together. We realize that. And then also, in Romans chapter 12, I want you to notice with me, after he speaks to us about offering our bodies a living sacrifice, not being like the world, but being transformed by the Word of God, he tells us that each one of us is to fulfill our ability. And then in verse 9, let love be without hypocrisy. It's more than just words. He says in verse 10, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another. Here is a spirit and a relationship that is very open. It is generous. It is genuine. And then he says in verse 11, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, rejoicing in hope, verse 12, and in verse 13, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. These two go together. Because many of the needs of the saints are provided for in an environment, in a venue that we call hospitality. And he tells us that we're to be given to it. And here the word given to means to pursue, to desire it in such a way that we chase after this. There are people that pursue a certain education or pursue a certain career, pursue various accomplishments, people that pursue money. We know what it means to pursue something. There is a dogged determination, a chasing after, a focus on something. And here he tells us that as Christians, we all need to be pursuing, striving after this aspect of hospitality. Well, we noticed in the first hour this morning that this word literally means to love strangers. It's more than just having brethren into our home for a meal, although that is included. But it involves the fact that we're interested not just in the lives of brethren, but we're interested in the lives of our fellow man. And this is what we see common throughout the Scriptures. And we're going to see a good reason for that. But let us remember that in our hospitality, and maybe we all have to start somewhere. Maybe we need to start with those who are brethren and develop that love for one another and to develop ourselves in that generosity, in being able to look outside of ourselves and to think about the cares and the needs of other people, and then develop it to where we are this way with all those strangers, brethren that we don't know, even our neighbor who may not be a Christian, the spirit of the Good Samaritan. I want us to back up, though. I was talking earlier this morning about the fact that This idea of a love of strangers was something that was very well understood by the people who would read that in the first century, because in their day and time, there was a tremendous necessity for the people of the host city to be hospitable and to care about travelers and strangers that would come in among them. Because for the most part, people in that day and time did not have the security provided. They did not have the prosperity or the hotel system that we have and the restaurants and other things like that. People took care of one another. Strangers came to know each other, to love and appreciate. It was reciprocated. It was pushed forward. What was done for them, they would do for another person. And we see this going even throughout the Old Testament. Abraham in Genesis chapter 18. And we see the messengers of God coming to him and his great urgency with which he provided for them. Notice there in chapter 18, beginning in verse 1, the Bible tells us that the Lord appeared to him by the terebinth tree of Mamre as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. He lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them, bowed himself to the ground, and said, "My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought. Wash your feet, rest yourselves under the tree. I'll bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts, and that you may pass by inasmuch as you have come to your servant." They said, "Do as you have said." In order for Abraham to do this, it took a great deal of work on the part of himself and of Sarah and of his servants. Animals were killed. Food was prepared. Meal was gathered and it was baked, and these men were fed. Not only were they fed, their feet were washed. Whatever need they had, if a garment was torn or needed to be mended for protection on their travel and their way, that was taken care of. That's what hospitality was about. As I said this morning, it was not a matter of checking off a list. It was a matter of having a genuine interest and care in other people, so much so that they would put aside their own dealings, that they would put on hold their own busy matters of the day, their interests, their urgencies, and they took care of other people. We can only imagine how that must have affected how they felt toward one another. One of the things we observe in the Bible is that love is not magical so that it is just there or not there. This is the romantic sense of love, that you either love somebody or you don't. There's one person in this world that you can love, and you can't love anyone else. And that may be poetic, but it's just not true. Love is generated by service. God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son. There is a giving, there is a sacrifice. And as we love, we give, and the more we give, the more we love, and it becomes reciprocal. And this was something that happened in their day and time. They were given water to wash their feet, a select calf was killed, bread was baked, milk and butter was provided. And not only that, but in verse 16, we see that Abraham did what was customary in that day, and he accompanied them out for quite a distance to provide safety. We know that he had his own miniature army, and this was common, especially of the wealthier people of that day, to protect their flocks and herds and their own families. He provided security and transport for him along the way as they departed. We see Lot receiving the same messengers in Genesis 19. And in verses 2 and 3, he gave them water to wash their feet again. He prepared a feast for them, and he offered protection for them that night. Rebekah's family, when Abraham sent his servant to find a wife for Isaac, we see that Rebekah's family, of course, relatives of Abraham, this was certainly something the family did, but it was common in life at that day and time. But in Genesis chapter 24, notice with me in verse 31, he said, "Come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels." The man came to the house and unloaded the camels and provided straw and feed for the camels, water to wash his feet. and the feet of the men who were with him. Food was set before him to eat. He said, I will not eat until I have told about my errand. And they said, speak on. Look at these provisions. This was someone they didn't know. Just like it was for Abraham, just like it was for Lot. I want you to notice in Exodus in chapter 2, the same thing was done for Moses when Jethro brought him into his house. And of course, Moses ended up marrying one of his daughters and worked many years for Jethro as a shepherd of his sheep, the old man of Gibeah, in Judges chapter 19 and in verse 16 and following, taking in the Levite from Bethlehem, the widow of Zarephath in 1 Kings 17 and in verse 8, and how she took in Elijah. She was a Gentile. Jesus even commended her spirit being of a Gentile and having this level of hospitality toward one of God's prophets. Of course, in 2 Kings 4, we read another woman very familiar to the widow of Zarephath. It was the Shunammite woman in 2 Kings 4, and she provided for Elisha. She had a special room for him when he traveled through. There's a reason for all of this. Not only was it customary, but I want you to notice over in Leviticus chapter 19 that this was a part of God's law. In Leviticus chapter 19 and in verse 33, God said, if a stranger dwells with you in your land, you shall not mistreat him. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. God says, don't ever forget where you came from. I think that's a very good exhortation for many of us. Don't forget where you came from. It is so easy as we become more and more prosperous, as we have what we need, that we become content with what we have, or at least to the degree that we're not asking from anyone else, and partly because we don't want them to ask from us. We're independent. We take care of things. We take care of ourselves. We're doing good on our own. And God's saying, don't get to that point. Don't ever forget where you used to be. And now you turn around and you give that same gift. You be kind to other strangers. So much so that He says, I want you to view them and to treat them like someone born to yourself. That's a child. That's one of our family members. We don't have a problem being generous and spending time with and sharing with and distributing to the needs of our own children, do we? I know that there are some deadbeat parents and folks out here that don't. That's not a problem here. We don't have a problem spending time with family, even extended family, parents and brothers and sisters, time like that. But especially our immediate family, those born to ourselves. We don't have to think about it and schedule it. We don't put it off and put it off. And the reason why is because we love them. It's something that we pursue, isn't it? We pursue that time. I know that we all get busy and there's times when we neglect one another to a certain degree. But God said, this is my law concerning these things. Look also in the book of Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy chapter 10, notice where he says there in verse 17, for the Lord your God is a God of gods, the Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality nor takes a bribe. He administers justice for the fatherless, the widow, and loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing. Therefore, love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. God makes absolutely no qualms about what He expected of them. And as we notice, outside of the observance of the Sabbath day, which was clearly a type of an antitype, the rest that we'll have in heaven, for the most part, the things that we read about in the law, there is an antitype. There is something that we find also in the New Testament. When we look at the Ten Commandments, when we look at the greater part of the law of Moses, many of those commands are reiterated in the law of Christ. And this one is too. While God does not give very specific and stringent details about it, He tells us to pursue hospitality. It needs to be something that we train ourselves in to the point to where we love caring for others. And not just for family, not just for brethren, but for strangers. This says volumes about the way that we would treat visitors in our assembly. I brought this up in the first hour. There should not be a person who visits in our assembly and leaves here without being overwhelmed with interest and concern and with care and with offers to provide for their traveling needs, a meal, a place to stay. Why isn't that done? Well, things are different, Brett. People today, they have access to hotels and there are restaurants and there's fast food and they're busy and they're in a hurry. That's not always the case. We don't know that. And the fact that some people aren't necessarily looking for something to be offered doesn't mean that it would not be good and profitable to them and to us too. Sometimes when we leave the company of a brother or sister, they may not ask us to lead a prayer, to say a prayer with them. They may not even think about it. Does that mean that it wouldn't be a good thing for us to do, to pray before we leave one another's presence? You know, there's some things that used to be done in times before that we've just gotten so busy that we don't do, and then we justify not doing it because no one else does it. And well, they weren't expecting that. That doesn't make it okay not to do it, does it? We need to change ourselves. Instead of being fashioned according to this world, we need to be transformed. We need to see what God expected. You know, many cases in the earthly life of Jesus show us hospitality. For instance, in Matthew chapter 8 and many other places, we see that Jesus and His disciples were constantly received by loving friends. Notice in Matthew 8 and in verse 14, when Jesus had come into Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother lying sick with a fever. Of course, he healed her, and she arose and served them. And when evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed. He cast out the spirits with a word, healed those who were sick, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, He Himself took our infirmities and bore our sicknesses. What a blessing to have Jesus in their home. But I'll tell you, it started with hospitality, didn't it? Receiving Him in, providing for Him. Mark chapter 2 and verses 1 and 2, verses 14 through 15, John 11 and 1, and so on. Even in Luke chapter 7 and verse 36 and following, we find even a Pharisee that receives Jesus and His disciples into his home. Of course, Jesus speaks to him there in verse 36. One of the Pharisees asked Him to eat with him, and He went to the Pharisee's house and sat down to eat. It's pretty bad when the Pharisees of the New Testament of Jesus' day are doing things better than some of us might be. That ought to convict us. I'm not saying that this man was right in every regard of his life. Jesus needed to rebuke him about some things even while he was there. But I'll tell you, at least he was hospitable. I have to wonder if Jesus came amongst us today without us knowing who He was, how many of us would have our homes open to Him? How many of us would receive Him in or even offer to? The two men on the road to Emmaus with Jesus in Luke chapter 24, they asked Him to travel with them. They provided a meal for Him and they wanted Him to stay over even longer, but He was unable to. I want you to notice also in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus speaks about those who would be hospitable to strangers, brethren, mind you, but brethren who are strangers. He speaks about those who would be hospitable and about those who would not. I want you to read with me in Matthew 10. Look in verse 11. He said, "Whatever city or town you enter, inquire who in it is worthy and stay there till you go out. And when you go into a house, greet it. And if the household is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And whoever will not receive you, nor hear your words, when you depart from that house or city, shake off the dust from your feet. Assuredly, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. I know that this has to do with receiving the truth as well, but it also involved being hospitable. And I want to tell you, there are many occasions where people are not afforded the opportunity to even hear the truth because they haven't provided the venue or the environment of hospitality where it could be taught. Look then later in Matthew chapter 10 and in verse 40. He who receives you receives me. He who receives me receives him who sent me. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. He who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. And whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, assuredly I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward. Have we lost sight of the fact that Jesus is connecting our relationship to one another, our support for one another, even our support for the truth, with the physical hospitality that we provide for one another, and especially for strangers when they come in? Brethren, when he talks about the same being given to us that was given to Sodom and Gomorrah, and he talks about the fact that receiving someone, providing for their needs, is the same as receiving him, you would think that we would be jumping over each other, falling over each other to fill out a list of who's going to provide for a visiting preacher. Who's going to invite the visitor in the assembly to eat lunch with them, or to provide them lunch, or to provide them a place to stay first. And yet we need to ask ourselves, when's the last time that we did that? And I don't say this very often because sometimes it sounds trite or a little cheesy, but this is one of those areas where, as I'm pointing a finger, and a very direct finger, I'm pointing several of them back at myself. Because I recognize that this is something that many Christians are failing in. And I believe that there is an immediate outcome of that in local churches. There's going to be an eternal outcome. That strikes fear in my heart. When I read these passages and I think about how attentive I am to faithfully assembling with the saints on the Lord's Day and in all the assemblies, gospel meetings and Wednesday nights, I realize how seriously I take the duty to lay by in store on the first day of the week. And yet here is a command that is just as sure, just as important, just as necessary for my salvation. When I see others who are failing in the assembling of themselves together with the saints, I can immediately recognize what is lacking in their life and recognize the danger to their soul. When I may be aware of somebody who is not being generous and giving to the Lord, and I seldom am or even know of that, but if I were to know of that, I would be alarmed. So much so that I would be compelled to at least make a gentle plea with them. So find some way to help them to be able to change their life, to be able to find a way to give to God. And yet, how many times am I failing in this regard, which is just as important and just as serious? In the parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus teaches about a man who stops what he's doing, a Samaritan, mind you, for a Jew. And he gives his entire life and time and attention to caring for what needs are there. A man who many others passed by. He provided for his needs. He left money to be provided for him. And in verse 37, Jesus said, "Go and do thou likewise." This is more than a kid's Bible class topic. We look at this and we try to fashion it in such a way that, well, if I was on the road and I saw a man who had been beaten and he was near death and no one else was stopping, I would stop and help. Okay, Jesus was teaching a lesson that would be followed in more than just that one specific area. It was a lesson that teaches us how to love our neighbor as ourself, which was what was supposed to compel the Israelites in their duty of hospitality. The New Testament examples of hospitality, we looked at some earlier this morning. Saul staying at the house of Judas in Acts 9, verses 11 through 18. Paul staying with Aquila and Priscilla in Acts 18, 2 through 3, and they're providing for his needs. Justice and providing for Paul in the city of Corinth, Acts 18 and in verse 7. Simon the Tanner and Peter in Acts 9 and in verse 43. Simon also lodged three messengers of Cornelius, we find out in Acts 10 and verse 23. And then when Peter and his companions came to Cornelius' house in Acts 10, in verses 24 through 27, Cornelius insisted that they stay and let him provide for their needs. How often do we insist? How often do we insist? Gaius was especially commended. In 3 John, verses 1 through 8, the apostles, the evangelists, and other saints carried the gospel to the Gentiles. They asked nothing from them, but people like Gaius provided for their needs. And when they showed hospitality to the apostles and to the evangelists and to the prophets, the Bible says that they became fellow workers of the truth. That way we all have a part. There is a sharing in what is done. And we read about many in whose houses the local churches of that day would meet, as we mentioned earlier in Romans chapter 16 and in verse 5. We read there about the church that is in their house, speaking about Aquila and Priscilla. Churches met there. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 9. Colossians 4 and in verse 15. Philemon's in verses 2 through 7. I want you to notice that in all these places we had Christians who were willing to set aside their own things and be very put out, at least in a lot of regards, in order to provide for the church to meet in their house. And yet it is difficult sometimes for us to have even a family into our house. It shouldn't be that way. And I want to suggest to you that there is a heart problem when it is not something that is natural. And that's where we need to start working. There is a need for hospitality today. We see in Titus chapter 1 and in verse 8 that this is a qualification of elders. 1 Timothy 3 and in verse 2, we read that in the first hour of our worship service. And there's an obvious reason for it. Because these men have to already be developed. Their heart has to already be there where they genuinely care for the flock. And this is one of the ways that that's manifest. A lover of strangers, a lover of those that have need to be interested in all of those things. But I'll tell you, it also provides for those elders to know the flock. There is a way that we come to know each other when we are together in one another's homes that we don't come to know each other in just our praise and worship to God. And when I say just our praise and worship, I'm not diminishing that in any way. It has its own purpose. Hospitality has another. And I want to tell you, hospitality is as important as any other command in the Bible, though so often overlooked. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, we've noticed this in earlier studies about the elders. But I want you to notice in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 that he says here in verse 12, he says, "And we urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you." Not only do the elders need to know the church and flock, the church needs to know the elders. And so that hospitality needs to be going both ways. I have talked to a number of elders, even evangelists, especially even recently. This has been a topic that we even brought up in our men's meeting here in this congregation. How can we do better in hospitality? What's causing us to fail in certain areas? And when I say fail, that doesn't mean that no one here is hospitable. It doesn't mean that there is no hospitality shown. There is. There's no doubt about that. And it's very easy to look critically and to say, well, this church is not hospitable. Well, I want to tell you, I can make a very long list of the hospitality that I know that's going on in this congregation, but that doesn't mean that it's enough. So this topic is brought up. How can we do better? How can we make sure that we're not failing in regard to strangers and visitors and brethren and one another? What we need to understand is that this is one of the areas that we come to know each other and we provide for that fellowship and sharing, patience with one another. Every Christian needs to do this. You know, in Galatians chapter 6 and in verse 2, I want you to think about some of the practical applications of some of these passages that we wouldn't necessarily connect with hospitality because the word hospitality is not used there. But let me notice the passage with you. And in Galatians chapter 6 and in verse 2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. How do we do that? Well, there are a number of ways, aren't there? But I want to tell you one of the first and one of the best ways that we begin to fulfill or to bear one another's burdens is when we bring someone into the close, warm, intimate atmosphere of our home where we can sit down and share something we have with them. We listen. We provide advice or at least sympathy. There is an embrace. There are prayers. There is no place that this can be done better than right here. And that's where many of these burdens begin to be lifted. Because here's someone who cares. They've already shown they care. Because when we just say, let me know if there's anything that I can do, it's very hard and rare that that's going to happen on a phone call. But when we've already shown that we care enough to bring that person in and we've shared what we have with that person, they know that we mean it. They're going to open up. They're going to share those burdens. We find out which ones we can bear, and there are some that they can only bear alone. But we're going to be able to have the ability to fulfill this passage instead of just memorizing it or using it in a lesson. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, I want you to think about this application. While the context here you're familiar with has to do with church discipline, he tells us in chapter 5, when it comes to withdrawing from some who walk disorderly, he says in verse 11, I've written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother who is sexually immoral or covetous or an idolater or a reviler or a drunkard or even an extortioner, not even to eat with such a one. Brethren, I believe that there at least is an implication there that we are to eat with those who are in fellowship with Christ. We are not to eat with those who have fallen away. Well, what does that mean? That means that we must be supposed to be eating with those who are in fellowship with Christ. Certainly not giving us a work of the church. This is an individual responsibility that we have. But I want to tell you that's something that doesn't happen often enough. And as we see in Genesis 18, it brings great blessings to us. As a matter of fact, Hebrews chapter 13 is a passage that we looked at earlier this morning. And one that I think that we're familiar with in this context, where he says in verse 2, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. This phrase, entertain strangers, is the same Greek phrase or a form of the same Greek phrase as what is translated hospitable or given to hospitality. And he says that sometimes we don't even know what a great thing that we're doing and the outcome and the blessings that it will bring upon us as Abraham was blessed so richly because of the hospitality that he showed to those three messengers that came to him. In 1 Timothy in chapter 5 in verses 9 through 10, he talks here about widows who are widows indeed. And he says in verse 9, do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number. He's talking about widows who can be provided for by the church. They are worthy. What characterized those women? She has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works. If she has brought up children, lodged strangers. If she's washed the saints' feet, relieved the afflicted, diligently followed every good work. You know, we go to Proverbs 31 a lot to talk about the worthy woman, but I want to tell you, verse 10 is a very clear passage of Scripture for the ladies of the congregation. This is not just for some exceptional woman who might want to go ahead and get the bonus points on the test, but no one expects that of you. This is what God expects from godly women. Lodge strangers, wash the saints' feet, relieved the afflicted. Brethren, hospitality is so important because it bears profitable fruit. I was talking about how I've come to realize that this is a command that I need to see parallel with other commands like laying by in store on the first day of the week, assembling with the saints. I need to understand it in that same serious of light that it's a consistent thing and a practice. It's something that I do, and I do it because I want to do it, like giving back to God, like assembling with the brethren. What happens so easily because of our busy lives, and I relate to it like I think all of us can. With young kids, we're going here, we're going there, there's so many things going on. That's still no excuse. Culture, prosperity, the fact that we can afford to do more things with our kids does not excuse us from doing what God has always required of godly people to do. I've got to see the same seriousness in this command as I do in His other commands. And as I see the seriousness and the importance of assembling with the saints, because I need that. I need to be together with brethren. But not only do I need to be together with brethren, but other brethren need me. This is a very important part of assembling Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 24 and 25, where he's talking about considering one another. One of the reasons that we assemble regularly is out of our consideration for one another. How different is that than hospitality? We need it. It bears fruit. Our giving and laying by on the first day of the week. We do it not because God needs our money, but because we need the outcome of that. Paul said that when they gave to him in Philippians chapter 4, he said, I don't desire your gift. I desire the outcome that you receive from giving. That's what happens. The more that we give, the more that we love. I can understand that. And I recognize when people are not giving, their love grows cold. And I recognize when brethren are not assembling, their love grows cold. I want to tell you, when brethren are failing in hospitality, their love is not what it needs to be. Hospitality bears profitable fruit. Number one, it helps in converting the lost. I want to go back to the primitive or the original, the literal meaning of hospitality, a love of strangers. Brethren, if we had that the way that we're supposed to, the people that we would be having into our homes and helping and spending time with that are outside of Christ, think of the opportunities we would have for Bible studies. Think of how these people would be moved to want to know more about us and who we are and what's different about us than others that call themselves Christians. We see these opportunities coming up over and over again in the New Testament. Now, you know, when we think about Zacchaeus, he didn't exactly invite Jesus. He had a self-invited guest. Jesus said, I'm coming to your house. And I think maybe sometimes we need some of that today. Maybe we need to just tell each other, hey, I'm coming to your house. Just to create some of that hospitality. But look at how it blessed Zacchaeus. Jesus came into his house. He taught Zacchaeus. You know, we think about converting the lost and we need to invite strangers in because we need to teach them. You know, sometimes maybe we're the ones that need to be taught, like Zacchaeus. Maybe we have something to learn. And it's that person that comes to our home that we think that we're helping them, and in the end, they help us. And I've definitely experienced that in my life. People who have come and spent time in our home that I thought maybe I needed to encourage, and I ended up learning a lot from them. It helps in converting the lost. I'm going to tell you, we'd be so busy with Bible studies if we had a love for strangers and we were hospitable to those. This church would be growing. It helps prevent apostasy. It replaces, think about this, hospitality toward brethren replaces association with worldly people. 1 Corinthians 15 and 33, evil companions corrupt good habits. We've got to understand that when we spend that time with one another, that we're going to be building one another up. We're going to be talking about things that are pure and that are spiritual, that are righteous and that are helpful. Notice in Luke chapter 22 and in verse 55, when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them, and a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, "This man also is with him." He denied him, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." A little while another one said, "You are of them." But Peter said, "Man, I'm not." And about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, "Surely this fellow is with him, for he is a Galilean." Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you're saying." And immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And we see here, as we studied last week, this is when Peter began to curse and swear. I'm going to tell you, one of the lessons we learned from that is that our association influences us. We hang around with people like that, we'll talk like them, we'll act like them long enough. We will. But when we show hospitality, and parents, we can do a great deal, the influence of our children by having more Christians into our home. That socializing and that busyness can be spent more with Christians rather than people of the world. And I'll tell you another thing, it encourages one another. Look in Acts chapter 2. When the church began, we see this as immediately a part of what Christians did. In Acts 2 and in verse 44, he says, "Now all who believed were together and had all things in common, sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. So continuing daily with one accord in the temple, and breaking their bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to the church daily those who are being saved." We grow closer, we grow stronger, and the church grows. You see that? I understand it is very easy when we have family to be content with that. We're busy with that. We spend time with our family. We don't need a lot of other people. And so then we see one another here in the assembly. We know we need that. We enjoy it, but that's enough. We go our way and we don't spend any time outside of the assembly with brethren. In the same way that we need that time assembling, we need that time together in hospitality. And God understood that. This is the tandem nature of our relationship with one another. They have to go together. You know the old saying that absence makes the heart grow fonder. The reality is absence makes the heart go yonder. And when we don't spend that time together with one another, there is going to be a disjointed and a distant and sometimes even a cool relationship that is there. We appreciate one another. We have some things in common, that which we share on Sunday and on Wednesday night. But then that's the only time we spend together. We will never develop a deeper relationship than that. It needs to go beyond our family. And because of that, it helps to prevent division. Galatians 5, verses 19 through 21, the works of the flesh include divisiveness. Divisive people will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. And Paul warned against this. How do we avoid it? As we spend time together, we get to know each other. We understand the big picture. When there is some element here that needs to be refined, we can be patient with that because we understand the challenges. We understand the struggles. We understand the background. And we are not only patient, but we have the time to influence and to help, and we grow closer together. We are of one mind and one spirit. What keeps us from doing this, brethren? If we don't do it, it will be worse for us than it was for Sodom and Gomorrah. If we don't do it, we're not receiving Christ. What keeps us from doing it? You know, I think sometimes maybe we just lack the logistical, organizational ability. Well, I just, you know, I'm trying to do this and I didn't get it put together and didn't get it together this time and didn't get it together that time. You know, that needs to be an alarm to us that there's something wrong in our heart, because I don't have that much trouble getting together with my kids or with my wife. I want to be with them. We make it happen. Yeah, we're busy. We've got a lot of things going. But we crave being with each other. We come back together. We're excited about it. It happens. I look forward to being with my parents and with my brother and my sister and their families. It doesn't fail me to be able to make that happen. So something is wrong. We've got to develop this ability. And I understand that even with giving, you know, well, this person who's struggling, you know, well, I didn't have enough money this week and I'll do it next week. Something came up and I had to pay a bill and I didn't have any money to give to God. I'll tell you, most of us would say, look, you've got to handle things differently. You got to start out at the first of the week. When you get that paycheck, you got to take that money. That's got to be the first thing you do, and you need to set that aside where no one's going to touch it. And then you live on the rest, right? Why isn't that true in regard to hospitality? I want to tell you, if we really want to do it, it gets done. It's the first thing that we take care of, not the last thing. That's what causes people to fail in giving, and we see that. What causes us to fail in hospitality? The men have already talked about it. We wait too long to do it. We put it off. I'm going to do it later. I'm going to do it later. I'm going to do it later. And just like with giving, then something comes up and we can't do it. If you want to do it, you can. The Lord knows it, and you know it. We know it. There's a problem with the heart. How do I fix that? Well, you know, this is like the giving and the loving and the loving and the giving. It's reciprocal. So what I've got to do is I've just got to step in there and I've got to start showing hospitality. The love will grow. And as the love grows, the hospitality grows. And as that grows, the love grows. But I just got to start. I've got to start doing it better, right? That's how we do it. So we've got to have that determination. We've got to ask for help. Confess our faults one to another. Pray for one another. Do whatever is necessary so that we are fulfilling this duty, converting the lost, and the world and the community will see something incredibly different about this church than the religions of men all around us, and we'll save our souls. I cannot say enough about how important this is, how convicted I am of how much we need this. And although there are many great acts of hospitality that have been practiced and that are being practiced, I am certain that there's more that I can do. I want you to make the application of this lesson. If you're here this morning and have not obeyed the gospel, we want you to know that the opportunity is being extended to you this morning to come confess your faith in Jesus Christ, repent of your sins, be baptized in water for the remission of sins. And after having done that, your sins will be washed away. All things are ready. We're waiting for you to make that decision. And if, as a child of God, there's anything in your life that is not in harmony with God's will, some transgression that separated you from fellowship with the Lord, take care of that this morning before it's too late. And if you need our assistance in any way to make yourself right with God, come forward and make that known. We want to help you. Won't you please come while we stand and sing the invitation song.